Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, we're going to talk about cars, your car, your RV, tires, suspension. I was told I needed this. I was told I needed that. What's the symptom of this? I took it in, and I paid a bunch of money to fix a vibration, and I still have the vibration. What do I do? All that kind of stuff is stuff that we can handle for you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. This show is brought to you by a bunch of repair shops, and these are guys that I've handpicked. These are the guys that I've known for many, many years. I'll bet you all the guys together I've known for 200 years. So they're not paying me to talk for them. In reality, I'm happy to talk for them. Automatic Transmission Exchange is a good guy. He's been around since 1968, 40th Street in Washington, north side of the road. Really a good transmission guy. And he's not one of those transmission shops that has decided to do oil changes and air conditioning work and all that other kind of stuff, of which most of them have no skill level and no history at all. He just does transmissions. He'll do manuals and automatics as well as differentials and all the related components, but Automatic Transmission Exchange, we call it ATE. Sitting next to me is my son, Alan, and he's up here. We're up north today, and you were here up north because why?
I was dropping off the Can-Am.
Oh, okay. So we got a Can-Am, which is a what do they call them?
Just UTV.
UTV?
Mm-hmm.
Utility vehicle? Or?
I don't know what it stands for.
Okay, it was a four
seater utility terrain vehicle. I don't know.
Okay, it was a four seater, but now it's a five seater because you put seat belts in the back.
Or uh-huh.
was it always a five?
No,
seater?
No, it's four seater.
Okay,
yeah.
And so we did tires and wheels, and you did lots of lights on it. Any motor work to it?
No, okay. not yet. Thinking about it, but not yet.
Okay, they're already fast enough.
Yeah, it's 172 horse.
172 horse on something that weighs not quite 2,000 pounds.
Yeah, it's sub 2,000, I would imagine.
Okay, and it has a top speed of, and this is what, when you buy them, it has a top speed of?
It's like 90 or 95, I think,
okay,
on the street.
But in the hills, you're not likely
yeah,
to do that.
No.
Okay, that's kind of the work that you do.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. we do a lot of these. I mean, we do a lot of stuff, just simple maintenance, just because people don't want to take them to dealers. So we do a lot of maintenance and everything from belts to broken axles to lights to aftermarket seats, steering wheel, seat belts, stereo, whatever you want, GPS.
Okay, the part I like about the one that we just made, that you just made for the family, is the stereo system.
Mm-hmm.
You have really good speakers on all four corners.
Yep.
Can you balance them where it's just from? I haven't been in it, so today's my first day. But the people in the back, can they say, tone it down? And you can just do the back, or does everybody get the same intensity?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I don't believe so. I think they're all kind of set.
Okay.
You'd have to have access, I think, to the amp, and that's underneath the dash. So.
Now, one of the things that you said that was a surprise to me is it takes a very long time and a lot of tools to get to the battery.
Yes.
And it's underneath the back seat on the passenger side.
Mm-hmm.
And so what does it take to get to the battery? Is it just you have to take everything around it
off? It's probably an hour and a half on a lift with the correct tools. I mean, it's a pain in the butt.
Okay. And then I noticed that what you had done is they make this kit that allow you to take the battery terminals and bring them to the exterior.
Right, yeah. We just pop a hole in the plastic, firewall, and put some access to the batteries back there.
And so what I saw was just like two battery terminals.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a red cap and a black cap. And so you can jump the battery from there?
Yes.
So if you didn't have that, would it be virtually impossible to jump the battery?
It would be virtually without having to take everything off, out, the back seat out.
Okay, so this is the case where the aftermarket fixed something that was broken with this new Can-Am Maverick.
Yeah. It's just, you know, it's silly. And I mean, the stock seats were a little bit easier to take out. This one's a little bit bigger, but it's not an easy chore.
Okay. It's not nothing you want to do.
No, definitely not out in the forest or something.
But when you talk about some of these off-road vehicles, they all have this big centrifugal clutch and this big drive belt.
Yep.
The drive belt can be anywhere from an inch to 2 inches wide.
Yep.
It's cogged. But we used to get wet if that was wet, and it used to take a lot of time to get to that. I noticed that the entire cover for that belt is just unsnap, unsnap. Can you actually change that belt out in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah, we can change that belt in probably 10 minutes.
And then before.
From start to finish.
Before.
Before it was probably only 45 minutes to an hour, but it's, you gotta carry a bunch more tools and it's just, this way it's just easier.
So it's just snap off the cover?
That's it.
Okay, is the cover airtight, watertight?
Are
you still going to get dirt in there and you're still going to get water in there?
Yes, you still are. That's just the nature of the beast. You get that stock. I mean, it's open to the top of vents and stuff, so water or dirt isn't going to hurt it. As a matter of fact, a lot of guys don't even run the cover.
Okay. And stock, for those that don't know it, is the way it came from the factory.
Yeah.
Stock. When we say it's something is stock, it's just the way it came from the factory. Then you add aftermarket parts, so you're going to enhance what you buy from the factory.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we got a caller. Who might that be, Gil?
That would be Barbara.
Barbara, good morning. How can I help you?
My husband and son have a project in my garage. It's a 1955 Chevy pickup that they've been working on restoring. But they kind of came to a standstill because they could not get the engine going. So my question is just, is there somewhere where I could tow that and have someone work on the engine and get it going for me so that we can get that project continuing?
So you can have your garage back?
Yeah.
I can tell. I can just tell by your voice because my wife's the same way. Oh, you're not going to call today? Fine, I'll call and ask Mark because I want my garage back.
Yeah, okay. All right, let me what part of town are you in?
Peoria, just on the edge of Peoria and Sun City.
Okay. This is going to be easy, to be perfectly honest with you. We need spark and fuel to get the motor to run, and we need the spark at the right time, and we need the fuel at the right time. So either we're missing spark or fuel, or we don't have it at the right time. So either you're going to get the fuel to be delivered at the right time and the spark to be delivered, or we're not going to have spark or fuel. This really isn't going to be $1 million deal.
The only thing I can think of that would make this a big deal is if it's some sort of a fuel injection and you've got to program it.
Okay. Did they change the fuel to like fuel injection, or are they going to stick with a carburetor on this?
It's got a carburetor.
Oh, that's
a piece of cake. On a 1 to 10 scale, for us old gray-haired guys, you're talking about it. To get this run. Now, I don't know what it's going to take. Maybe it needs a new fuel pump. Maybe the distributor's not spinning. Maybe the ignition module's bad. I don't know what the parts are, but to diagnose this thing is probably less than $200 for sure. So I would.
Okay.
Okay, and then give me your major cross streets, and I'll guide you.
Well, there's Happy Valley Road, and Lake Pleasant Parkway.
Ooh, you're way out in the northwest.
Yeah. Do you know anybody out this way?
Well, the closest I can get to you is 40th Street and Greenway.
Okay.
And then
who's that?
Blackwell. And
that's where I would send her to.
Yeah, Blackwell. Now, the other one is Kurtz, and they're at I-17 and Bell. No, yes, Bell.
Yeah.
I-17 and Bell. And so if Kurtz is, I can guarantee you, Kurtz, they got a lot of gray-haired guys there. And I use that affectionately because some of the young men in our industry didn't walk the 55 Chevy path. So they just don't know the car because they're working on these new computer cars where you're working on a keyboard. So really and truly, this isn't that big of a deal. If you're going to tow it and you need it close by either Bell and I-17, the northeast corner, it's called Kurtz with a C. And call him up and say, I got a 55 Chevy. It cranks over but doesn't start. I'm assuming it goes rrr, 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 but it doesn't start.
Is that right?
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what you say. It cranks over, but it doesn't run. It doesn't catch. It doesn't start. So that's the vernacular and the terminology we all recognize. So that's what I would do is send it to Kurtz.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. It's funny that you nailed that down. She just wants her garage back.
No question. I could tell the second she called. I could tell in her voice.
And we hear that all the time.
All the time. Yeah.
And you'd be surprised on how many women are actually involved in that conversation.
Well, she said, my husband and my son. And I went, I can finish this story. I know where this is going right here. We're working on this 55 Chevy. She wants her garage back.
Yep. Okay, we got another caller. Who might that be?
That would be Pete.
Pete, good morning.
Morning, Mark. This seems to be the day for old cars that won't start.
Okay.
I have a 1938 Chevy Coupe. Now, this thing was hot-rodded many years ago by a previous owner. And it's got a 350 Chevy V8 and a 350 Auto Trans. Now, this car's been sitting for about 10 years, but it did run and drive when it was parked. And I want to get it back on the road. And because I'm an old hot rodder from the 60s and 70s, I decided I want to put the battery in the trunk.
Okay.
So I got the cables in there. I bought cables from a welding supply someplace on eBay.
2 minutes.
And drilled two holes and grommets and bolted the black ground wire to the frame because there was a hole right back there, so it went right into the frame real nice. Red positive. I put along the frame and the gas line to the starter and bolted that to the stud on the solenoid.
Okay.
Now, when I put the battery in, I wanted to see if it had power. So what I did was I turned on the lights, and I ran around the car, and all the lights worked, dash, headlights, back, everything. But now the problem was when I put the key in the thing and turned it to start, all it did was click one time. Each time I turned it to start, it was just one click.
Okay, I think I can fix your car right now.
Okay.
You said the headlight, and see, this is how important it is to listen. The headlights worked. Okay, the headlights are going to pick up their ground from the frame. So when
right.
you go to the frame, home free. But now you got a click, which is a low voltage symptom. You need to jump more grounds in this thing. You need to go from the frame to the engine. You need to go from the frame to the support.
I actually did that.
Okay.
What it was, see, what they did when the guy first built this thing, they built a heavy metal battery tray and put the battery behind the right front wheel. In the back of the fender, you know, the fender sweeps all the way back to the door. And that's where the battery originally was. So the original ground wire, the negative wire for the battery, was bolted to the starter. They took one of the starter bolts out that bolts to the engine, and they put it in there. And I took that wire, and I bolted it to the fender, and that also goes from that battery tray they built to the frame. So in front, it's got another ground that goes block, fender, frame. Now, do I need another ground on top of
I don't
that
know.
Yet?
I don't know. The issue is I'm trying to fix it through your eyes. This isn't a big deal. Just take a voltmeter, hook it to the negative cable.
Wait, hold on. I didn't quite finish my story.
You got to hurry.
What I did was I went on your website, and it's the website said if there's just a click, it's either the starter or the engine's frozen. Okay.
Okay, but I was going to tell you how to fix that, okay? I'm telling you to take the voltmeter, that's what I was starting to say, and start checking to see if you got 12 volts everywhere you think you got 12 volts. So stick to the battery and go to the frame and then go to the engine, then go to the radiator support, and then go to everywhere and see if you've got 12 volts to everywhere. Then you can go from the battery negative or the positive, and now you start checking your grounds. So you can do that to determine whether you have 12, and your battery should have 12.5 to 13 volts in it to begin with. So you're working on that. So everything originates from the battery. So get your jumper cables out, go to the positive end, and then start checking the grounds all the way around. This isn't a tough deal, but if it's just clicking, and you said the headlights were white and bright. So if you read it.
Well, okay, this is the problem. Again, I didn't finish.
Okay, I got to take a break. So we'll come back and get you and pick you up. It's 18 minutes after the hour, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. Alan Salem, Mark Salem at your service, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or car problem, your make and model, give us the symptoms, and we move from there. Hey, Pete, I'm not going to be able to fix your car. And what happens is I make guesses and you've already done it, and I've made guesses and you've already done it. The problem with that is I'm working through your eyes, and clearly something's wrong. If you read FAQ 28, it talks about how to diagnose the starter by looking at the headlights, and you can do the same thing with a voltmeter, and I explain that on the FAQ as well. So if the voltmeter doesn't change when you go to the solenoid trigger, and you don't get 12 volts to the solenoid trigger, then you've got a problem between the battery and the starter. So I just can't help you. You can go there and find a shop that can help you, but it's just one of those things that's difficult because the mistakes when we have a car like yours, it's just because the electrical system hasn't been circled. And according to you, you've done it all. So I just have to wave the white flag and say, you know, I'm sorry.
Now, the other thing, too, is a click can be a bad starter. A lot of times, you know, and it depends. I think if you get a real weak, you know, click, then that's a voltage. But if you get a real strong click, a lot of times at the shop, what we do is we'll hold it in the start position and smack on it with a hammer. And if it's a bad starter, it's going to start.
And more than likely, this car's got a brand new starter in it or a brand new rebuild in it. And those are the difficult part. You can do all of, and I agree with you, you can do all of that. The easiest thing to do is get your voltmeter out and understand what it's telling you and where the power is dropped off.
Yeah.
He could have a bad neutral switch. However, I'm thinking, if the bad neutral switch, he wouldn't have a click.
Right.
If the click, that means the solenoid's being activated, but the starter's not spinning.
Right.
So with solenoid, turns the starter motor on. So if he's got a click, then how come we're not spinning the starter motor? But if I were working on it, I would take some jumper cables and I would feed that starter motor trigger. And if the starter started spinning, then I would know I still got the circuit.
Yeah.
So somewhere between the battery and the trigger to the solenoid that activates the starter, there's a problem there.
Well, and that starter's been sitting, he said, for 10 years.
Assuming that, if that's the case,
A good smack on the hammer may just loosen up those windings.
You're absolutely right. And not enough to damage the case.
Right.
But a couple of now, what we normally do is one guy's going to get in and hold the key to the on position. The other guy's going to whack the starter a couple times with a hammer. All of a sudden, it starts cranking and you're done.
Yep.
But it's called a volt drop test, and all you're looking for is the same voltage. So if the battery has 12.8, it better have 12.8 everywhere there, both on the ground side and the power side. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Blackwell Automotive, we talked about him just the last caller when we talked to Barb. He's up at 40th and Greenway. He builds hot rods. He does maintenance. He does fleets. He does everything from oil changes to complete restorations to complete engines and transmissions. But, folks, most of us can tell you unequivocally that's a very small percentage of our business. Today we don't do nearly the engines and the major engine repair on the vehicles today that we used to do in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, for that matter. It's been 20 years since we've graduated from motors that didn't go past 80 to 100,000 miles. We've got customers with 3 and 4 and 500,000 miles.
We added up Joe's the other day.
Yeah.
You know what his has on it?
Joe G.
Yeah.
Uh-uh.
The green one?
Yeah.
685,480 miles.
Okay, and that's a 70-something?
70-something
F-100?
F-100. F-100. I think it's on its third motor.
Okay. And it's what motors it got in it? 360?
I think so.
Okay, it's a big V8.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not the 460, though.
I don't think so.
And he drives a long way every day from the mines to a small town near the mines out there in Miami and Globe and Superior.
Mm-hmm.
Drives a very long way.
He comes to us.
We've done all of his maintenance for years.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things I noticed when I looked at his file last is we didn't do very many brake jobs. And it's because he never hits the brakes between home and the mine. And then from the mine to home, it's, you know, he's not one of those guys who's going to stop at every bar on his way home.
Right.
So he's got brakes that last forever. 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or a car problem. But getting back to Blackwell's real quick, he's a good guy. He's been around a long time. We all got started in the gas station business. And most of us, if not all of us, that play by the rules, we understand how the old cars worked. We understand the idiosyncrasies. We understand what a click means. We understand where to find it. And not only that is we're consuming water, so where's it going and all the clamps are tight? Well, it's easier for us to figure that out. We're going to pull the spark plugs. We're going to pressurize the cooling system. We're going to crank it over 20 minutes later, and if it shoots water out of the exhaust pipe or out of a spark plug hole, then we've already answered the question. We know that there's going to be an intake gasket leak or there's going to be a head gasket leak, and we've got coolant leaking into the cylinder. That's the reason why it runs bad when you start it up, and it seems to clear up good. But the symptoms are important. That's what's really, really important is the symptoms. Tell us your make and model, and then just tell us what the symptoms are. A guy called today, and he said, I've got a air conditioning issue. When I drive down the road, it's nice and cold. When I'm around town, it's not. How easy is that for us to fix?
Yeah, it's easy.
And here's the deal. The difference between driving on the highway and driving around town, I'm going to throw it out there. Do you know what that is? There's a simple answer to the difference between city driving and highway driving when it comes to being related to the performance of your air conditioning system. Uh-huh. So he says, on the freeway, it's much colder than around town. And I'll spot you this. It's not a Freon level issue.
Right.
And so we can, and then there is tricks that we can do when it comes to, and it's in the shop, in order to duplicate the problem and then know for sure what the situation is. So, and if you want to guess, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960.
Real quick, I'll tell you, you know, we came up here yesterday in the heat of the day, 5 o'clock, 5:30, towing a trailer, and just make sure when you're towing, and people, we must have seen 60 cars overheated yesterday. I mean, trailers, not trailers. Just bring water with you. I'm preaching to the choir here, but I mean, it's not a race going up these hills towing stuff, as you and I think it is. You know, I mean, ours are set up for that kind of stuff. But when you get a bone stock and your foot's to the floor, I mean, you got to respect these things. They just bring water and just take your time. Cause I mean, like my truck, I settle in, I downshift it, get it up to 2,500 and just, you know, 55 miles an hour up these big hills, but just take your time and bring water with you. Cause I'll tell you, I felt bad for those people.
Well, and that's true. But you also see a lot of them, they drive until they're belching steam from underneath the hood.
Yeah.
And you're way past that. The gauge, we don't want the needle in the red zone. And we want the gauge to be somewhere between half and a little past three quarters. Mm-hmm. That explains the environment you're in. But if you think for a minute that you're going to go faster as that gauge is crawling up like a speedometer and you're going to overcome the overheat that way, you're not. And a lot of times these vehicles are way overloaded. They're hauling a trailer they shouldn't have been hauling at all. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and we'll be back right after this. Three, 4 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. To my right is Alan Salem, my son. We're in business together. We're in Tempe. This show is not about us. This show is not about our repair shop. This show isn't anything. It's about you. So we're here to answer questions and help you sift through the automotive stuff that you have to deal with. We can teach you what to say and what not to say. We can teach you how to get them to perform because of what you can say. The last thing you want to do is tell them that your neighbor said to do this. That is a recipe for disaster, and most of us won't do that. So we're going to work through somebody else's capabilities and someone else's eyes, and we're going to charge you. And if they're wrong, then you're mad, and they're saying that we don't know what we're doing. And then it just turns into be this big battle of nothing. So just don't do that. Don't tell us what the Google guy says on the Internet. Don't tell us what some guy said on the Internet. Symptoms. Just symptoms. That will be best. To my left is a kid named Mark Salem. He's been challenged his whole life with having my name. And I'm sorry. That's all I got to say. I'm sorry. Anyway, I told you about Blackwell, and we're going to tell you about another shop, Harker's on 38th Avenue in Indian School. I tell this same story over and over again because it's so valuable to me. A guy takes his BMW in, and somebody tells him it's a $2,000 job that needs to be done. It's somewhere around there. And then he takes it into Harker's and he says, you know, this is what I've got. It's blowing water out of the vents, and predominantly on the passenger side more than the driver's side. Water. There's a mist coming out of the vents. So they went in, and at the very behind the glove box is this box called the evaporator. And inside is the heater core and a cold. So one of these little radiators is hot. That's the heater. And one of them is cold for the air conditioning. Well, the air conditioning will sweat, so we have to have a drain off the bottom of the box. The drain is about the size of a pencil, and it's got a hole in it, just slightly bigger than the lead in the pencil. So the idea is that's supposed to drain. So you raise it up in the air. This is a great story. And the young man that did this had a big, long screwdriver, so he just stuck it into the drain, and he's covered in water before he can get the heck out of the way. So he drains the water out of the evaporator case. Then he goes up in there with some of these tweezer kind of things, and he grabs whatever's there. He pulls it through. Then they know how to charge that box with air, and then all of a sudden a bunch of stuff comes out of the drain, and they're done. $140 as opposed to $2,000. Now, when they would have gone in and done the evaporator core, they would have fixed the drain. So you can understand that's what's important. So when you got a $2,000 bill, it's a good idea to get a second opinion. Unless, of course, you've been dealing with this facility, this repair facility. You did, your mom and dad did. It's been in the family 20 or 30 years, and they've always done a good job, and they've always treated you right. Then, yes, that's where you need to go. So Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue in Indian School, good place to go, and they're really, really good with diagnosis. I did a dashboard on a Dodge truck that I couldn't figure out. So I thought I'll send it over there, and they figured it out within about 3 hours.
We do a lot of those.
Yeah.
So, holy cow.
And give me the symptoms and give me the repair.
There's a lot of different symptoms, but typically the blend doors break. So they'll get stuck in the defrost position, or they'll get stuck in the foot position, the air will.
Okay.
So there's, on some Dodges, there's five, some there's four, but there's actuators in the back, and those actuators go bad or the doors go bad. So we go in there, and we'll usually do all of the doors, all of the actuators, the heater core, and the evaporator. And Adam probably does, I don't know, 3 to 5 a month.
Okay. And this, these are going to be high-mileage trucks. And we don't want to go in, because going in and coming out is a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
You're pulling the dash
mm-hmm,
apart.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to go in and do activator number one, and then do two, and then do three, mm-hmm, and then do four. Mm-hmm. So we really think it's in your best interest, especially high-mileage trucks. Let's just do the whole thing. Now, the blend door, just for the rest of you, the blend door's job is, I want you to picture the letter Y. Okay, so we have two verticals, and then we have like a tree, and then we have the trunk, and then we have two verticals. The blend door is right in the middle of the Y. So if it opens correctly, it'll send hot air or cold air to the left side, the high side of the Y. Or it'll send hot or cold to the right side, and then the very bottom is where the hot air comes in. So what we're doing is we're using this door to close this door and open this door. So it's called the blend door, but it actually has between 2, 3, and 5 positions.
Yeah, and all the gears are plastic. You know, they're plastic. So after, you know, they start, the gears on the actuator and the gears on the doors are plastic. They break, and then they stay shut, and that's why it comes out only your feet or only your, you know,
it's
the
stuck.
Dash.
It's not going to work, and the little electric motors, they don't work worth a darn. 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or a car problem. And we're really good with arguments between husbands and wives. So if the husband says this and the wife says that, the wife can call in and say, hey, but here's what you do. You don't necessarily tell us what you are saying and your husband's saying. You can tell us the truth, or you can switch it, because it doesn't make any difference to me. I'm not necessarily going to always side with the wife or the husband, but it's always pretty good. There's a lot of people with cruise control issues. They fight about when you should and when you shouldn't. But you said on the way up here, you said on the way up here at Mount Ord, coming up the backside of Mount Ord from Phoenix,
mm-hmm,
you said there was a guy in the right lane. Steam was coming out from underneath his hood. He was clearly in a serious overheat mode. What was he hauling?
First of all, he was going southbound, so he's on the other side of the road. But okay, regardless, he was a big toy hauler, big, big, big toy hauler at 5 o'clock, Mount Ord, I mean the hottest part of the day.
So he's on the upside of Mount Ord from Payson.
Yes.
On the upside,
yes,
southbound road.
Yes, yes.
And so he ends up on the right-hand lane, and he's blocking right-hand lane,
yep,
and he's doing 5 miles an hour.
He stopped. He's out looking at the car.
Okay, so
parked
the hood's
in the
open.
Middle of the lane.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a lot of unhappy people, but there was signs before that,
mm-hmm,
that he could have picked a spot to pull over and stuff. But like you said, no matter whether you're coming from Payson up to Mount Ord or whether you're coming from Phoenix up to, because the roads are steep on both sides, it's not uncommon in the summertime to see all kinds of vehicles off to the right. And here's the common denominator. The hood's open, and there's coolant or water running down the road from underneath the front of the vehicle.
Yep.
And that's just something that's going to ruin your vacation.
Mm-hmm.
602-508-0960. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and we're going to go straight to Bob because I didn't get him last segment. Bob, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. I inherited an 07 Chevy Malibu in December from my mother. It had 45,000 miles, and I had the transmission fluid serviced, the filter and fluid,
mm-hmm,
and the brake fluid service. And I'm doing the oil changes myself, like every 4,000 miles. And it seems like it's in pretty good shape. It only had 45,000 miles. I don't have the owner's manual, though. I can't find the owner's manual.
Okay, you
so
get on the internet.
What else do you think I should do?
I think you've done some fluids and the oil changes fine. I would check the tires to make sure they're not more than 10 years old. Your life is in danger, and so is all your passengers, if the DOT suggests that the tires are 10 years 10 years or older. So I'd have that checked. That's easy. Somebody can do that. You can do that yourself, but here's the problem. The DOT is often on the inside of the tire. So there's a little brand mark in it, and the last four numbers indicate when it was born. So it would say 10-03 or 10-13. So it's the 10th week of 2013.
Mm-hmm.
So then I would do hoses and belts because I don't think it's a good idea if they're all original. I think that's a real weak spot. So tires, hoses and belts. Can you think of anything else?
No, I was going to say rubber components. Hoses, belts, tires. That's rubber is the most important thing.
Yeah, and the only thing I would tell you is it's entirely possible that your mother drove that as if she had a hot cup of coffee on the dashboard. Would that be a fair assumption?
Yes.
Okay, I'd drive it like I stole it for a little while, and so I don't think it's gonna. I'm not suggesting that you put your foot to the floor and just blow this thing out and to wait till back off the throttle till it does 100. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just suggesting that she's been riding a horse that has been walking for many, many years, and perhaps maybe you should get the horse to trot and then run at the appropriate time.
So what do you think going forward about the transmission fluid, like every 50,000 miles or what? Or
I would think that would be fair.
I'd refer to the owner's manual once you get a copy of it, but I'll bet you it's going to be 50 to 75.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the transmission fluid, you already know what the old stuff, was it pink and pretty?
They said it wasn't bad. I asked it. Yeah, I went back there when they dropped the pan. And first when they heard 07, you know, they said, oh, we're not going to touch that transmission. But then when they saw that it only had 45,000 miles, you know, then
yeah,
it was okay, you know. Then first they weren't going to service it because, you know, they don't want to, you know, they thought it hadn't been, which it hadn't. It was the original fluid, but it only had 45,000
yeah
miles.
I think I would take the dipstick out and get a white paper towel and just kind of slap the dipstick on the towel and you'll know what cherry red looks like, and I'd probably change it if the color changed in the next four or five years.
Yeah, I would do the rubber components, and then I would drive it until stuff come up. I wouldn't do anything more preventative that I can think of.
Oil changes.
Yeah. Nothing
it
preventative.
And assuming the oil changes is oil, filter, and check all the fluids, check all the belts, and check all the tires. So that's kind of what we're talking about. That's a full inspection, but no, and if you want an owner's manual, just the tip of the name of that company that makes all the owner's manual is right on the tip of my tongue. But you can get an owner's
Chilton?
No, not Chilton. You can get an owner's manual on the internet. All you're going to do is plug in your 07 Malibu owner's manual, and you'll find one on the internet. Or you can go to the dealer and buy one, but mm-hmm, there's a good possibility they don't have it, so you're going to have to order it, so you might as well just order off the net. Okay?
Okay. All right, thanks, guys.
You betcha.
Thank you.
Dave, you're up next. How can we help you?
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. My daughter has a 07 Honda CR-V, and it's just been a tremendous car. However, a couple years ago, the AC went out, and we had it taken care of, and it was running great and everything. Now, this summer, the last couple weeks, it appears to be cycling when she is at idle, at a stop sign or a, you know, a traffic signal, whatever. But then it kicks back on when she's driving and it cools the car down. We took it over and had someone look at it, and they say that the compressor is bad because the numbers, so on and so forth, high side, low side, are all over the board. Do you have any insights for me?
I'm having a tough time with the diagnosis and what you say. What I hear you saying is the cycling, when she comes to a stop or at low RPMs or low mile an hour, but it gets nice and cold when you're running down the, you know, Indian school at 45 miles an hour, 50. Is that right?
Correct. That okay is correct.
I'm just calling foul here. If the compressor was bad, why would it blow cold air at 45 miles an hour? It doesn't
correct
make sense. I think the clicking noise, do you know the difference between normal and recirculatory?
Yes.
Okay. I want her to go to normal, and I want her to run the fan speed wide open, and I want to know if it clicks then. This thing could be freezing up at low speeds because it's so efficient, and when it freezes up, then it'll start cycling the clutch. And what happens is people run their fan speeds on low, and they go to recirculation, which freezes everything up. So when you stop, it starts cycling the compressor. You say it runs at highway speeds or high, you know, 45 and north, it runs nice and cold. That's all it needs to do. We've got this problem with its cycling. It's not going to be low Freon. Otherwise, you wouldn't be cold on the high side. You wouldn't be cold on the high speed side. So I think it's a possibility. And what I'm saying to you is get off low and recirculatory and go to normal and bring that fan speed up. Let's melt the ice. And if she says, oh, it doesn't cycle, then what's happening is it's freezing up. So she needs to stop recirculating all the cold air and get it colder and colder and colder because it's freezing up the unit. So she can go to normal and drop a window. That happens a lot, or kick up her fan speed. We just need to melt the ice cube, and we're not going to do it by blowing across it like this. We're going to need to blow a hurricane across it in order to do it, and that's the reason why we go to outside air and we kick the fan speed up. Let me know how I did.
Interesting. Okay, and so no the, mat.
Yeah, and
put it on normal.
Yep, normal, and let's kick the fan speed up. I want the fan speed to be 2, 3, or 4. I'd prefer 3 or 4.
Okay, so full fan speed and normal, not max.
That's right.
That should take care of it.
And the question is, the question is, how does that affect it?
Better, worse, or the same?
Exactly. Better, worse, or the same.
Gotcha.
This is just part of the diagnostic. Okay. That may not be the issue, but this is just part of the diagnostic to eliminate first.
Yeah, they wanted to put a whole new compressor in, and didn't make any sense to me either. So.
That's the easy way out.
Well, and here's the problem. If her habits are causing this problem, and it's not a bad habit, I'm not saying that. My mother did that. My wife does that. If her habits do that, it's going to do the same after they put a compressor in it. And then all of a sudden, he's going to chase his tail, and you're going to be mad. I'm just suggesting this is part of the diagnostic procedure. But I want to tell you something. If I heard this story and my shop was involved, I would be very concerned. I would be very concerned because my industry is supposed to be better than this. It would be easy to go say, come with me. Let's go drive. Click, 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 click at a traffic light. And he's sitting next to you. Click, 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 click. Compressor cycling on up. And then he says, okay. And he changes the air conditioning controls and then they drive another mile and they stop. No clicking. Another mile, stop, no clicking. Okay, we're done. That's it. So why didn't we do that? That would have cost you $75, but you'd rather have that than a, what was it, $1,200 to $1,500 compressor job?
$15.
Okay. How's that for estimating? Yep. Good. All righty. Good luck to you, buddy. Good luck to you.
Let us know.
Thank you.
All righty. 602-508-0960. We have another hour to go, so if you'd like to give us a call, you can. Let me talk about a really good shop up in North Phoenix as well. I-17 in Deer Valley is Action Auto Repair. Tom and I have been friends since 1983. I know these guys for a long time. I know they know how to do good work. I know that they stand behind their work. I know they have technicians that are capable of doing 92 to 98% of the diagnostics necessary for cars. So Action Auto, again, I-17 in Deer Valley, full-service, family-owned auto repair shop that's been servicing the Deer Valley and North Phoenix area since 1983. So if you want somebody good and has ASE Master Certified Technicians, then perhaps Action would be a good place if you don't already have one. Oh, we got a caller. Who might that be, Gil?
That would be Steve.
Steve, good morning.
Yeah, morning. I got a 2016 Chevy Trax. I get up and go grab the paper in the morning about 2:30, and the clock on the radio is like off by like an hour and a half. I'll go out another hour and a half later, and the clock is fine. I do not have, it has the OnStar, but it's not activated. Can you think of anything that might be causing that, or is it set by OnStar automatically, or?
What is it? A 2016 what? Trax?
Chevy Trax.
I don't even know what that is. That's weird. I've never heard that before.
And that's exactly the point. I think, I don't know. But I can tell you right now, I wouldn't spend a dime on this. I wouldn't spend a dime.
Oh, no, I'm not going to. I was just curious if there's something that you were aware of or heard that before about the clock being set automatically, and then, you know, like I said, it just happens real early in the morning, and then later on I come back and it sets the correct time.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I'm not tripping about it.
I believe you. I believe you. I think we're on the right track. I think that it's got two different issues. Maybe the baseline is 11 o'clock, but in reality the cloud is telling it it's 12. So it's having a tough time deciding whether I'm set for 11, but it's really 12. One of the things, if you want me to guess, is I think you have the best chance of fixing this if you disconnect both battery cables, touch the two cables together, disconnect them from the battery. Do not run some steel bar across the battery terminals. That'll be ugly. So take it off and just touch the two cables together, or put a piece of metal between the two and touch them. That's going to discharge all the capacitors. That's going to bring you back. It's like rebooting your computer. And it's going to bring your clock down to zero.
Don't drive at 2 in the morning, right?
Exactly.
Use your wristwatch.
Hey, my son just looked at me. When you said 2:30 in the morning, my son just looked at me and said, it looked at me like, you know.
Who does that?
Yeah. He's never seen 2:30 in his life.
And, you know.
He's never seen 7:30 in his life. What am I talking about?
The dentist.
Let me ask you a question.
That's what Chinese people. Yeah.
Okay, we're not going there. Hey, let me ask you a question. Is this your car or your wife's car?
Yeah, it's mine.
Does she have a car?
No, it's only car, and it's a 2016. It only has 3,000 miles on it.
Oh, jeez.
Well, this is going to be under. Well, I don't know. It's 16. If it's going to have a warranty.
Yeah, past the extended.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about it. I'll try that battery trick thing, and if not, no big deal. It always sets itself in the morning. So.
Okay, now, if in fact it fixes it, and it brings it back to zero, and then it fixes it, next time the plate passes, you put a couple extra dollars in.
Amen, brother.
I need all the help I can get when I get to the pearly gates.
2 minutes.
All righty. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. We've got another hour, so we're going to have about a four-minute break at the top of the hour, and then we'll take your calls. 602-508-0960. Auto Dynamics is in Sun City. It's been around a long time, and I've known Chuck Nyday since the late 60s. His son, Derek, is also involved in the business. Auto Dynamics has been around. And like I say, they do really good work in Sun City. So if you're interested in talking or having somebody, and you don't have anybody already that you just absolutely love, then I'd like to suggest Auto Dynamics. They're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. North side of Grand, just west of 99th Hour. They're not going to sell you unnecessary parts, and Derek makes sure of that because the technicians are not paid a commission or a percentage of your repair bill. They're on salary or hourly. That's a kind of a nifty way to take away the potential that somebody's going to take advantage of a customer to enhance the amount of money they make. Not everybody's doing that. It's an interesting concept, and so far it's been very successful. There are other people that have done the same thing. So with respect to Auto Dynamics in Sun City, it's really the only one up there in Sun City that I really like. So Auto Dynamics. Again, the phone number is 602-508-0960. You're welcome to join us if you have a car question. Sitting to my left is Mark Salem. I'm Mark Salem. He's my grandson. And to my right is Alan Salem, which is my son. So there's three generations of Salem, which actually adds up to about a third of a human brain. So, and if there's
and it's
a third,
in my head.
And no, it's in your son's head. So if there is a rationalization error or rationing of the brain, Mark Salem, the third of our generation, has all of that. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, we're going to go till noon talking about cars, car repair, car anything. We're pretty capable of talking about tires, diesels, motorhomes, hot rods, old cars, new cars, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
602-508-0960. Which one of the GMs is eating up camshafts? Which motor is that and which
4.8, 5.3, and 6.2.
Okay, is there a year range? Are they all in the 90s?
Or 7.5, and we've done them as late as 2018. Oh, 7.5 to 2018.
And the typical repair cost is?
As
little as and as much as?
I would say as little as probably $3,000 up to $5,500, depending.
Okay. And what happens is the camshaft, which has elliptical bumps
rollers
on it,
yep,
and there's a roller cam or a roller lifter. And the reason we put a roller in there because the wheel was spin and then we're supposed to minimize air. There's a metallurgical problem where there's significant wear between the roller on the lifter and the camshaft lobe.
Yeah, the way I understand it actually is that the lifters, the DOD lifters, or the lifters that are used to achieve the displacement on demand, which is the eight to four cylinder. As you're driving, you know, at highway speeds, you go from eight to four cylinder for fuel economy, quote unquote fuel economy. The lifters that they use to do that are going bad, and they're locking up, or they're not working correctly, which just beats the crap out of the cam.
So it's a metallurgical issue.
Uh-huh.
And if you change your own oil, you might see some specks of metal. If you dump the oil filter into a bucket and look at it, you might see some specks of oil. But most of the time, that's going to get caught by the filter.
Right.
But what's the standard symptoms? What do people say when they bring in their V8 Chevrolet GM?
We can see misfire at idle, traction control light, Stabilitrack light, brake light, usually all three of them together, because the engine is misdiagnosing the misfire as some sort of a traction loss. It's that bad.
Okay. All right. So this is one of those things, because I was going to ask you that. What the heck does a bad camshaft and lifter have to do with Stabilitrack?
Yes.
Or what was the other couple of
things? Stabilitrack, traction control, and brake.
So traction control is we're going to make sure that you're not going to spin the tires abnormally. We're going to apply the brakes and try to get Stabilitrack is going to make sure that when you make an evasive movement that we can actually control that.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to do with braking as well to some extent. And what was it? DOD, which is...
Brake.
Okay. Yeah. So it's going to end up with a brake system problem and it doesn't understand what's going on.
Right.
DOD...
Displacement on demand.
All right, that's just where the computer will decide, I don't need eight cylinders. She's just driving down Indian School at 45 miles an hour, and her foot's pretty steady, and so I'm going to drop down to six cylinders, and I'm going to kill four cylinders. I'm not going to deliver spark or fuel, usually fuel. And then that way she has a four-cylinder car because that's all she needs right now.
Right.
So
it's terrible, by the way.
What's that?
It's just a terrible design. We've had nothing but we've seen nothing but issues with those. Everything from oil consumption. As a matter of fact, we have a little dongle that we plug in that shuts them off, and the vehicle actually gets better fuel economy. We found in our stuff better fuel economy with that stuff in less. I mean, we've cleared up multiple people's engine oil consumption just by shutting it off.
Okay, now let's explain dongle. Okay. I got this. Underneath the dash, there is a connector with a whole bunch of wires.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be called serial stream data. It can be called
OBD2.
OBD2.
ALDL.
Yeah, assembly line data link. So when you plug something in to this assembly line data link, which is two rows of connectors.
That are 26 pins,
something like that. You can plug something in that will lie to the computer. It'll change something in the way that vehicle drives, starts, runs.
Mm-hmm.
And what this dongle does is it takes away the computer's ability to go into displacement, to change the displacement, and make your V8 a four-cylinder or a six-cylinder.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps it as an eight-cylinder.
Yes.
So Alan's saying on the ones that we've done some testing or we've done for a customer,
mm-hmm.
then the customer says, I get better fuel economy without the computer taking control of my engine and giving me four-cylinder and giving me a six-cylinder and an eight-cylinder when it makes the decision rather than I make the decision.
Right.
Now, there's likely to be some emissions problems with that, but nobody knows. But that fix is just simply better than the emissions caused by that motor when it goes into to hell.
Well, I don't know how there'd be emissions because, well, they don't roll them anymore, so it would just plug in. But, I don't know how that works.
Well, you're messing with emissions. Removing the computer's ability to take four cylinders away, take two cylinders away. But what we're doing it for is we're trying to save the engine from major repairs. So, anyway, that's just one of the many things. We deal with those kinds of things on a variety of cars two or three times a week.
Mm-hmm.
And there isn't any car out there that's really immune from this kind of problem. 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or car problem, 602-508-0960. And when you have a problem like that, there's really three answers. Number one, we don't know what it is, and neither does anybody else. Number two, if it's intermittent, we need to wait till it gets a little worse before it's easy to find. Because if it doesn't happen in our bay and it doesn't happen when we drive it, we can't tell you what's wrong. And the third thing is we look at it, we listen to it, we drive it, and we go, we know what this is. But normally in Alan's case, he'll bill you 10 hours in diagnostic, but he really took a 30-second trip around the block. Isn't that right?
30-second trip around the block and a four-hour nap. Yeah, typically.
Oh, God. Anyway, 602-508-0960. But, you know, even the cars you and I drive and have in the past, we've not picked good ones. But people don't know it's a bad one.
You typically don't know for a couple years until you get a bunch of them out there with a bunch of miles on.
Okay. All righty, Gil, who we got?
We have Mike.
Mike, good morning. How can we help you?
How you doing, guys?
Good,
pretty
thanks.
Good. Yeah, hey, I called you about a month ago on my Ford F-250 99 7.3 diesel with the power steering issue. You kind of told me how to isolate what the problem was using a garden hose, and that was real good advice. But this pump we changed out, and now it just seems to be very loud, like whines when I turn it right and left. The pump seems to whine.
Okay. And the fluid's good.
Noise.
Right.
Fluid's up.
Okay.
Yeah, first thing we checked.
Okay. I need you to look at it in the morning with a flashlight, and I don't want it to be foamy. And then I want you to look at it when it is acting up and tell me if the fluid is foamy. And here's why.
Well,
go ahead.
Okay. Well, my son actually was idling, took the cap off, looked in it, and it was foaming at that time, just sitting in idle.
Okay.
There was little bubbles, he said.
All right. See, the pump has a pressure out and low pressure in. So it's got real high pressure going out to the steering box, but then it's converted to low pressure. The energy is used, and it comes back as low pressure. If we suck air anywhere in that system, then we're going to foam the fluid, because as the fluid runs through the hoses, we're introducing air that we shouldn't already have. So
does that make the noise, whining noise?
Yes. Yes.
Make that noise?
Now, okay. That could have been the reason why you had a belt problem at the beginning, is it had foam, but it could also be because the pump is bad, and that's the reason why it ate the belt, and when you put a new belt on it, now all of a sudden we've got the same problem, but it's magnified. So I think if you find out that it's foaming it, have you ever done this before, looked at it? I think I personally have looked at a couple of these power steering issues, and that seems to be the common denominator is foamy fluid.
Well, I'm unclear real quick. Did you replace the pump?
Yes, the pump is replaced. The remanufactured.
I think you got a bad pump.
About a month ago.
Okay. Oh, let me ask you another question. There's no leaking, right?
No leaks.
Okay, it's got to be a bad pump.
Got to be a bad pump.
And here's one of we're both thinking. I don't know what he's thinking, but I'm going to tell you what I'm thinking.
You don't want to know what I'm thinking.
Okay, and that's fine. But it's about me. It's not about you, Mike. It's not about you. The issue is if we're sucking air, that converts to a leak when you shut it off. Because we're sucking air in, but then after you park it, then we have fluid coming out. And I should have asked you that at the very beginning. Is there anything on the ground?
Would it be on the driveway?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, it's dry.
Okay. And then when you put the new pump on, or the next pump on, I want you to leave the return line. You have to put a rubber cap on the bottom of the power steering pump where the line comes in. Put a cap on there.
On the low level? On the low side?
Yes. And so this takes two people, and you're gonna start it up with a funnel in it, and you've got the low side capped. And on the high side, we're gonna take that off and just kind of hold it. So we're gonna be pouring fluid into the reservoir, and the high side is gonna be aimed at a 5-gallon bucket, and we're flushing the system.
Yeah.
And you're going to be turning the steering wheel left and right, holding the idle up slightly. So we're not going to run. We're going to run clean fluid from the brand-new power steering pump out the high-pressure hose into a 5-gallon bucket. So we're not going to run it through the steering box. And we're going to just flush out the steering box using the new pump. But we don't want to complete the circle because we...
How much fluid to use? I would say 2 pints, probably. Yeah. A quart?
I'd go more than that.
Okay, so 2 quarts?
Yeah, once you start getting it, let's go ahead and flush it good.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and then obviously...
And not, you reuse that. Obviously don't reuse
that. Yes, I was just going to say, don't dispose of that properly and then fill it up with clean fluid.
Okay. And then button it all back up and then fill it up.
Yep.
Yeah, and here's something else before we even do that. I want you to turn the steering wheel all the way to the lock position on the right, and I want you to rev the motor and rev it good. And then I want you to turn it all the way to the left and do that. Hold it. That's called the lock position. And rev, 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 rev. And then let it sit for a while and look down the ground, because that's putting the power steering system in the highest pressure it can manage.
Yeah.
And that's going
to
check.
It makes the most noise, Mark, when I lock it.
Okay.
Both sides. It just goes crazy.
That's because it's foaming the fluid, but also when we go to lock position, yeah, I'm going to find a leak in that high pressure line. That's what I'm looking for. You said there's nothing on the ground, but I'm now going to force the pump into real high pressure. Now look for a leak on the ground.
Okay.
All right.
All right. A little point. We did change out the high pressure line, too. It's brand new.
Okay. Oh, okay, that's good, but we still got, if the old pump came apart and ended up locking up the pulley and causing the belt to do whatever it did, then there's metal in the steering box. Now, another thing you could do is how would we just go to the high pressure inlet on the pump or on the steering box and just flush it out the low side? I don't know that we could develop any kind of pressure doing that. Mm. We need the pump in the system. So, yeah, if you don't put a rubber nipple on the back of the power steering pump, as you add fluid to it, it's just going to leak out the back. That's the reason why I'm going to have you put a plug on the low pressure side. Okay?
I understand. Thanks a lot, guys. All right. Appreciate it.
All right, man.
602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. You got 100% chance to get us. We'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Alan Salem. He works in our company and handles the diesel and the hot rods and the performance and all that kind of stuff. And we got next to me is Mark Salem, which is Alan's son. And he is being taught what not to do and what not to say. We're going to go to the phones right off the bat. Dan, you're up first. How can I help you?
Yeah, Mark, I want to know the protocol on emissions. A friend of mine took his car in for the first time to get emissions after 5 years. And it didn't pass because insufficient data. They couldn't get any information out. And I said, well, you got to drive the hell out of it before you take it in there.
Okay, you're confusing between monitor reset and no data.
How long does it sit around? If the car sits around, how long does it take to reset?
No. If the monitors monitor the performance of the engine and the tailpipe, here's the deal. In the old days, we used to disconnect the battery, we'd reconnect the battery, and your car would pass emissions. They fixed that now where they ain't going to let you do that. So we have in the background, we got these little guys that are looking at everything. And if they don't say, oh, what used to be is now fixed, now the monitor's reset. But when you're talking about no data, then that means the ALDL connection, the assembly line data connection, on the left side of the dash is not talking. So when we plug into the left side of the dash, we're not getting information. So you need to go get that fixed. And typically that's a bad connection or a fuse or something like that.
It's usually the cigarette fuse. And, monitors, the way I explain it to people is it keeps people from, you know, you're in line, you got a check engine light on, and then all of a sudden you're the next car in line, you clear the check engine light, you pull up and you pass. Well, as soon as you clear that check engine light, it re-clears the monitors. You need another 50 miles, and that's what keeps you from cheating the thing. But
And you're right about that. What happens is it has to see the problem come and go, come and go, come and go. Let's pretend 10 times. Well, if it only goes to 8 and you go in through emissions, you're not going to pass. But we got two problems here. Number one, whether we've got no data or whether the monitors haven't been reset.
I think this one is the no data. You're
but
right.
If it's no data, it's okay. Your paperwork will show your repair shop what the heck is wrong, and they'll be all of us know what to do. And that could cost you, if the monitors haven't been reset, you just need to drive it some more. He needs to drive it.
That's what he had to do. That's what he took it to the dealer. I said, what's under warranty? Take it back to them. And they just drove it around, And they thought it was a low battery of the cat, but they drove it around. He put 80 miles on the night before after he flunked. And then they took it 50 more, and then it passed no problem.
Yeah, okay. That's what it is.
And here's the, when you drive it and get the monitors reset, I'm exaggerating here. It says, start it in the morning, drive 6 miles, no higher than 30 miles an hour. I'm being facetious here. Honk the horn, drink 2 cups of coffee, and then go 65 miles an hour for exactly 7.5 minutes. And this whole process, it takes 2 guys to go drive it and do it. One tells the other guy what to do. And if it says, do 45 miles an hour for 4 minutes, and he happens to be on Indian school and hits a traffic light, you got to start over. So if it's a monitor reset, well, if it's a monitor reset, then you just described what the dealer did, and I give them applause. They did exactly that, plus he passed. So this won't be anything that comes up again unless somebody decides to be stupid and disconnect the battery within a day or a week or even a month of an emissions test. I got to move on, Dad, but thank you. That was a great question. Clay, you're up next.
Hey, good morning, sir. I have a 97 S10. Had the brake going down to the floor, so told me master cylinder, of course. I went ahead and put a new one on, but knowing better than most people do, I didn't bench bleed at first. So I still had the squishy pedal, so this morning I went ahead and yanked it off, bench bled it, and went ahead and bled all the brakes again, but I still got a pedal going to the floor. Any ideas?
Well, there is a procedure you have to follow. And you can't just hang on the rear brakes for a week and then go to the front brakes for a week, because you have a proportioning valve in there. And I want you to picture this proportioning valve as a square box, okay? And inside, it's got this slider, this device that slides left and right. So when you bleed the brakes on the rear, then you lose pressure and it's shoved to the front brakes. So we have to dance between front brakes and rear brakes. So when you do the fluid, you have to dance that way. And so put the master cylinder back on, get somebody in the car, and you do right rear, then do left front, and then left rear, and then do right front. And what we're doing is we're centering that pin inside the proportioning valve. Now, sometimes you got to bring it into a shop, and we're going to have 3 guys working. We're going to have one in the car, we're going to have one down bleeding, and the other guy's going to be tapping the proportioning valve with a hammer. It's a very sophisticated way.
Okay, because I did passenger rear, then driver's rear, then passenger front, driver front, but...
Let me ask you a question. Did you gravity bleed them first? Because that's one thing that we typically do. We'll open up all the stuff after we put them on, turn a bottle upside down, and let it set for an hour with all the things open just to gravity bleed them. Yeah.
And so
I never even heard of that before.
Oh, yeah. That's just a gravity bleed. Try that. The other thing, too, is I don't know if 87 is too early, but a lot of these now you have to... Or, I'm sorry, that's what I meant. A lot of these now you have to activate the ABS in order to complete the bleed procedure too.
And what he's talking about is we're going to plug our scanners on, and it's going to, and the scanner is going to say, okay, open and close the door 3 times, wave a duck around your head and quack. I'm being crazy, but there's different things you have to do to make things happen. I like Alan's idea the best. Just take the lid off. And now it's a split lid. Are you going to use the front brakes, which is the bigger reservoir, or the back brakes? Or which one are you going to do first?
Well, I think
they've got the little slot in the plastic in between them, so they actually are joined somewhat.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So then that's it. You just turn a big quart bottle upside down, open up the bleeders about a turn or a turn and a half, and go get a cup
wait till
of
they all wait till they all start actually dripping where there's no air. And then do them all up, and then do one at a time where you have, you know, I do this for the guys all the time. Hey, you got a second? Okay. So I'll sit in the driver's seat, and they'll go, okay, pump it. I'll pump it 3 times and hold it, and then they'll open up the left rear. And then they'll do that 3 times, and they'll go to the right front, same thing. So we're always doing that for each other, but yeah.
And you can't pump it too much because you'll foam the fluid.
Right.
And when you foam the fluid, now we got air in the fluid. So, and it's just do an X pattern. Just drain and bleed them for, or just let's gravity bleed them, and then let's do an X pattern and see what happens. Okay? All right. Good luck to you, Clay. Good luck.
Thanks.
He's got a Chevrolet, so this isn't that hard.
Yeah.
We're afforded to be
2 minutes to tell.
Okay.
Right, so.
I know. David, let's talk real quick, and I'm going to take a break, and then I'm going to come back to you, but just kind of give me the 2,000 foot view real quick.
Okay. Again, LS motor, and I want to swap the radiator to an LS dial, the cross flow instead of the downflow. and with the both fittings on the same side.
Okay, why do you want to do that?
Because I pull the trailer, and right now in the summertime, it doesn't like that.
And what kind, where's your gauge at? Where's your gauge at when it doesn't like it?
At 230.
Okay, I wouldn't be worried about that.
What's the year and make of the vehicle?
It's a 79 Jeep truck, but it has an LS3 in it.
Oh, 79 Jeep truck LS3, I got you.
Here's what I'm thinking, real quick, because I'm gonna come back to you. First of all, vertical flow and cross flow are going to give you the same performance. We got water coming out of the upper hose, and a vertical flow, we're going to go into the top tank, we're going to gravity feed all the way down the bottom, and the lower hose is the suck part of the coolant. So we're going to pressure in and suck out. Well, with a cross flow, we're going to have two tanks on either end. So when we fill it up, then we're coming in on one tank. So it then crosses over the front, and then it's sucked back into the engine, and hopefully we're going to lose about 20 degrees as we do that, 10 to 20 degrees. I'm not real worried about your 230. A lot of cars today are running 230 and 240, and we know that that's a benefit, and I'll explain that on the other side of the break. But I'm not really worried about it. I think you're going to be in the same boat. I'm pretty sure you're going to be in the same boat, and we'll talk about more. And also, Randy, you stay right there because we'll be back in about 3 minutes, maybe no more. Welcome back, everybody. You have no idea what goes on behind the scenes. Alan and I are arguing and talking and brainstorming David's problem. Alan, take it first.
On your Jeep, is it oversized wheels and tires, or are you just factory?
No, 35.
Okay. So I'm going to tell you this. I do a lot of aftermarket, a lot of custom stuff, a lot of big, heavy tow stuff, a lot of diesel stuff. I've never fixed an issue by re-engineering a cooling system. What I have fixed a ton of overheat issues with is new gears. You know, that truck probably came with 31s or 30-inch tires on it. You go to a 35, and you're dropping your gear ratio from a 373 to, what, a 311, 313, 318, something like that. And the thing can, you know, it's running at 1,500 RPMs when it should be running at 2,200. And that creates a tremendous amount of heat. So that's just something to think about. I don't know if you've re-geared it, but I have fixed more issues than I can even count by doing stuff like that.
And to give you an example, it's you're riding around in fifth gear when you really should be in third gear. And it's because you've got those tall gears. You've moved it from a 373 to a 311, and it's having a tough time. Now, let me talk about your 230. You're going to get all your buddies that are going to say, oh, Mark doesn't know what he's talking about. I've been around. Your 230 number is no big deal. And everybody goes, well, I got a 180 or I got a 195 thermostat, and I don't care. I don't care. The issue is this. We used to run these cars at 180, and they didn't last 100,000 miles, and here's why. Is water boils at 212. So if we don't get the engine oil temperature up north of 212, then we can't turn the water in the oil to a vapor, and then the PCV valve sucks it out of the motor and sends it out the tailpipe. So every motor we did in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, until we went to 195 in the late 90s, early 2000, then every motor suffered. 100,000 miles, that was it. All of a sudden we realized that's why when we take these motors apart, it's like chocolate ice cream everywhere. There is mud throughout the sludge and mud throughout the engine. Whoa, all of a sudden we put a 195, we start running 220 and north of 220. Oh, well, we take them apart at 300,000 miles and you don't find an iota of sludge. So we want the motor to run north of 220. Your overheat is 240, 250, 260.
That's a 260, yeah.
And so it's just really a matter of, I think you want to redesign it. I don't think you're going to make any progress if you've got big tires on it. And I don't think redesigning it from a vertical flow to a horizontal flow is going to do anything. I don't think putting three fans on it's going to do anything. I don't think taking the grill off of it's going to do anything. I think you need to either deal with the gears or just accept the fact that you're going to run 230 and that's okay. I can tell you my diesel will run 230 when I'm hauling four horses from Phoenix to Payson. I know I'm running 240, and I don't care. But the red zone in almost every car is 250, 260. Agreed?
Yep. Yep.
Okay. So those are the kinds of considerations I have. And it's not uncommon for me. I'm a gray-haired guy, so I'm not beating them up. But it's not uncommon for a gray-haired guy to bring some altered vehicle in, and he wants it to run at 180. And it's just not going to happen. And that's not what's in his best interest anyway. We still need to get the water out of the oil. We don't have sludge. The sludge plugs up the screen. The oil pump dies, takes the crank and the cam with it, and all of a sudden you need a motor. So got to run, David, but good luck to you. Good luck to you. And if you want to continue the conversation, mark at marksalem.com, mark at marksalem.com. Randy, how can I help you?
Hey, guys. Got a Ford 7.3 diesel. So you guys were talking about that power steering pump. I sure hope you put an ATF in that thing.
I would think you
would. I didn't hear. I don't know, but that could be a problem. So I got a problem. Did brakes. I got 280,000 on this. Did brakes all the way around. Took it for a drive. It's been about 5,000 miles since the brake job. And every once in a while, it'll pull hard right. And then I'll stomp on the brake really hard, and it will go away. Is that my left caliper sticking?
Yeah.
It's pulling right?
Yep.
No, it's your right caliper sticking.
Right caliper.
So it's...
It's going to pull. The caliper's sticking, so it's going to apply the brakes.
Sounds like, yeah.
It's going to apply the brakes on the right side a little longer than the left side. It's going to cause a right pull.
Okay.
And let me tell you how to check that, okay? First of all, if the caliper's bad, the inner pad's going to wear a whole bunch more than the outer pad. So if you want, pull the wheels off and look at the pads. If you've got the right side, the inner pad's worn different than the left side. And you can see the obvious difference. Then you know your caliper. Because the outside pad excessive wear is the hardware kit. We need that hardware kit to slide that caliper in and out without the pads in it. In and out, just with one finger. So that's a hardware kit.
And I made sure the pins were greased on
Okay,
it too,
perfect.
So. Yeah, the slide. Make sure slides are greased, pins are greased, all that stuff.
And you might be the only one in the last 6 months that knows what that means.
Yes,
and so true. Congratulations, yeah. Because you know that. But we're pretty sure that the calipers. Now, obviously, if you're going to do one, you need to do both.
Yeah, I listen to you guys talk about your Dodges all the time. I got a 7.3 with stage 2 injectors and a beefed-up tranny. I think I can run.
Wait a minute. Oh, wait
no.
a minute. It's
oh,
not
no.
fair. It's not.
Oh,
hold
oh,
on,
no,
hold
no.
on, hold on, hold on. It's not fair because we love the 7.3.
Yeah, we do.
It's a monster motor, and we tell people all the time, both on the radio and in person, mm-hmm. you can sell that for what you probably paid for it. We have 7.3 dealers.
No, that's not true, Mark. I have to disagree with you.
Okay, well, you talk. I can give you the names of two people.
But you made that statement before.
I can give you the name of
the 7.3? Are you talking about the
7.3? Yes, I bought that for $37,000. I cannot get $37,000.
No, listen.
15.
Oh no! You can get more than I think you can get more than 15, depending on stuff.
Maybe 15 to 20.
We're not going
to
argue about it.
Yeah.
Stop. I got two ex-cops that sold them for virtually what they paid for them. But we're not going to argue with that. With it, the fact of the matter, you got a caliper problem. You can sell your 7.3 all you want. I've got customers that have business cards galore of people that have left the. I'd like to buy your 7.3. Everybody knows that's the best motor that Ford ever made. So,
it's easy to work on.
Yeah.
Too.
But anyway, we'll go back to the brakes, and we're not going
to
argue about whether you can get $37,000 out of it. Because if you got leather seats and fancy everything else, then maybe you can't. But if it's a cowboy wagon and it's got vinyl seats,
yeah, I mean it depends on a lot of stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of variables. Yeah. But anyway, thanks very much, Randy. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. There's a Strictly Diesel Service and Repair works on a lot of 7.3s, but he doesn't do major work, he'll tell you. Nate says the 7.3 is just kind of a maintenance motor. Mm-hmm. We don't do turbos, we don't do oil leaks, we don't do a lot of down tubes and all that other kind of stuff. But Strictly Diesel's up on I-17 at Pinnacle Peak Road. And Nate is a friend of ours. We work on diesels and so does he. We oftentimes call one another if we're having a problem and hope the other one can give us guidance. But he also has a website, strictlydieselserviceandrepair.com, where he sells parts 24 hours a day. And he has parts. What, he had a dipstick repair on the 7.3 mm-hmm. that he designed himself. Mm-hmm. So everybody that's got a 7.3 and they have a dipstick problem, everybody's trying to fix that, but Nate has a fix for that that they designed and built and manufactured themselves. So this guy wasn't born yesterday, and besides that, when you meet him, he's the kind of guy that you hope your daughter brings home. He's tall. He's really, really tall, and he has hands like tennis rackets. So the last thing I want to do is make Nate mad where he slaps me upside the head with one of his tennis rackets. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to be back in just a minute. And like I said before, we talk behind the scenes, Alan and I. Okay, hold on. Let me turn you on. I'm touching this one. All of us guys that have testosterone, and Alan and I included, I'm going to include us there, everybody does stuff to their diesels or their hot rod trucks, and hopefully they're going to make themselves better than everybody else. That's been going on since I was a kid. Okay? So you take your 327 engine and you're going to take the two barrel off and the four barrel on, and that's a big deal. So when you hear somebody that says, you know, I've got stage two this and I've got a new turbo, inside what we're thinking is that just brought you up within 50 horsepower of some other Ford or some other Dodge or something like that, because there's such a difference in sophistication of power and performance from one year to the other on a many, many cars and trucks. So I was thinking, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it takes his 7.3 up, but just under my 6.7 Dodge that has more horsepower than he has, even after he does the turbo and the stage two.
Yeah. First thought I thought was, that's cute.
Oh, stop it. And that's the way guys think.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The guys come in all the time and tell us that I have 1,200 horsepower on their Ford because they put some fancy oil in it.
Yeah, no, we what's that noise?
What happened?
I don't know. In all fairness, though.
Oh, we lost the station.
Oh, no, I got you.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear. Okay.
In all fairness, though, we love the 7.3. I mean, it's a great motor. It really is.
And we've said that from day one. Let's go to Laszlo. Laszlo, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Mike?
Yes.
And your partner. I have two vehicles. I'm kind of old guy and retired. I have a F-150, a six-cylinder engine pickup truck.
Okay.
And what having problems with the air conditioning is running perfect, but the bottom by the foot seems like the flip valve is kind of stuck. And I don't know how to correct the problem. Somebody has recommended to me to take off the vacuum hose that is controls the valve to open and close. And the vacuum is perfect. I put it back in, and it's still the same symptom.
Okay, what year is your Ford?
Is 1997.
Okay.
F1 six-cylinder engine.
Okay.
And it's stuck on the feet?
Yeah, on the feet, under the, by the foot, you know. That
yeah, it's stuck on the foot, on the lower,
Okay, so I hear you saying is you got cold air coming, and the air conditioning is working fine, but it's coming out of the floor.
That's correct.
Okay, yes. That's a piece of cake.
Yeah.
That's a piece of cake. Go find some gray-haired guy, and what he's going to do is we got a vacuum line underneath the hood that is supposed to come through the firewall, and it's broken. It's plastic. The connections come loose. We don't have vacuum that's feeding it. This is a repair, if I'm right, this is a repair that's less than $50.
It's going to take longer than.
That's exactly right. Finding it's going to take longer than fixing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would suggest that you go find somebody who knows the old Ford trucks and just tell them what you've told us. I got good cold air conditioning, but it's coming out of the floor and it won't come out of the center vents. We've lost the vacuum supply to the controls. Now you had a second question.
Yes, the second question is I have a 2006 Volvo S80. And I don't know if it's usual things that having we don't have cold enough air in the vehicle. It's been serviced back in Santa Barbara, California, so I supposed to have enough charge in the air conditioning system, but it doesn't cool enough.
Okay.
And my wife is always complaining, you know, right here in Arizona, it's 115 degrees.
Yeah.
You have to have good air conditioning to go somewhere.
All right, Laszlo, let me tell you what I think. In the old days, we never had a dipstick for the air conditioning Freon, so everybody flew by the seat of their pants. Everybody had a different way to get a car to be cooled. But today is just completely different. We can, and this is what we do. We look at the car and we determine that it takes 30 ounces of refrigerant. We don't even care what it's got in it. We're going to suck all your Freon out. We're going to clean it and filter it. And we're going to find out it has 26 ounces and you need 30. We're going to give you back the 26 and we're going to add 4. Now, the success rate on that is virtually 99%, and that's the first time we've ever had a dipstick for the air conditioning system.
A hypothetical dipstick.
Hypothetical dipstick. So we know you're low, we know you're, but here's the best part. While it might cost you $150, we're putting your Freon back in it. So we're not going to charge you for that Freon. We've cleaned it up, and we're going to charge you for the service, but we're giving you 26 ounces back.
A lot of the other things we're seeing now, too, is and this is terrible. Don't ever do it. But a lot of overcharge conditions because people are going to, you know, Home Depot or some of the parts stores and getting those cans and just, you know, go until the yellow arrow gets in the green, you know, thing. That is just – that's terrible. Don't ever do that.
That is the dumbest thing in the world that you can do is go in there and grab a can of refrigerant and it's got stop leak in it because at that point we find stop leak in your air conditioning system, you're on your way. We're not going to touch that. That stop leak will destroy our piece of equipment. So there – and like Alan said, everybody's got more refrigerant. About a third of the cars that come in for air conditioning service have more refrigerant than they should have.
Yes.
So those are the things, Laszlo. What part of town do you live in?
I live in Litchfield Park.
Okay. I would call a couple of shops and say to them, do you have the ability to suck out my Freon, clean it, measure it, give me my Freon back, and then top me off? We had a guy not so long ago in a Volvo, if I'm not mistaken, and he came in, and I tell people we're going to guarantee this because it works every time. So we did it, and he says, I'm going to Tucson. He says, I don't want to pay you until I know that it's okay, and I'll pay you on my way back from Tucson. We said, fine. We're going to lose, what, $125, $150? He calls 10 minutes later, and he says, let me give you my credit card.
Yep.
And that's what he said. So he knew that the difference was immense just right then. So, anyway, Laszlo, I got to move on, but thank you for your call. Those were two good questions. Jim, you're up.
Hi, thanks, Mark. I'll make this as quick as possible. My oldest son in Wisconsin just bought a 20 Santa Fe, and we were talking, and I told him, son, this is your dad talking. Would you please read the manual from front to back? And don't skim, but read it. You know, read it. And then just as we were about to hang up, he made a statement. He said that his Santa Fe came without a spare tire. And I haven't bought a new car in 20 years, and I was kind of befuddled by that.
Yeah.
Do they come without a spare tire now?
Some of them do. Some of them do.
Really?
Yeah, I would say maybe 5 to 10%. Again, everything now is fuel economy, weight. They want to save all kinds of stuff. I know, like, the Pontiac Solstice and the Saturn Sky – I know those come with a bag. It's got a compressor, a bottle of stop leak, and that's it. So they want you to use a stop leak, then they want you to do the compressor. And Corvettes, they don't come with a spare. There's a lot of cars that don't come with a spare.
And they have run flats, too. There's a lot of them have tires that are $500 a piece, but they're run flats. So if you lose the air and you puncture the tire. But the stop leak's not going to help it if you kissed a curb on your way home from the bar. Okay?
And
it's not going to – and then I'm going to turn this around on you, and I know that you're going to take this as a joke. But it in the new cars, we're fighting for fuel economy to a tenth of 1%. So we're really looking for fuel economy. If they had their way on fuel economy, they'd weigh everybody before they sold them a car. So if there's a slim trim wife that has a very husky husband, then they may say to the wife, you're going to get 29 with you in it, and you're only going to get 26 with him in it.
Yeah.
So it's really kind of touchy about that. But, you know, he's either got run flats or he's got something in the trunk. He's got something, but I can tell you this much, there's no room for a spare. So if you don't have a spare, there's no room for one unless he wants to bungee cord it to the roof. But if I were here, I'd get road service, and the problem's done.
That's what I told him. Yeah, I said, I hope you have a road service plan, you know?
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is I always try to talk people, if it does, I doubt your Santa Fe has run flats, but if it does, I always try to talk people out of run flats. They're just a bad, bad deal.
And they cost us so much money.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, people say a run flat might be $300, so you call it $1,200 for a set, whereas I can get you a really good tire. It's going to last twice as long, ride twice as good for half the money. Well, what am I going to do if I get a flat? Well, you're going to take that $600 that I just saved you, and you're going to pay a tow truck to do it. So they never think about, oh, that makes sense. Okay, so take that $600 and put it in a savings account.
And let me tell you something about run flats. I had the opportunity on behalf of NASCAR to drive a car around the old PIR, and it had run flats on it. And I want to tell you something. We worked that car to death, and we were able to take those run flats and run them flat. And so even though, in spite of the fact that they say run flat, the directions say 45, 55 miles an hour to the closest place of repair. Eddie, I'm not going to get you. Here's what I'm going to offer you. Eddie, I want you to send me an email, mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. And I want you to give me your phone number, and I'm going to call you back with a blocked from my blocked cell phone, and I'm going to answer your question. Because I left you hanging, and I'm sorry about that. So, Eddie, send me an email, Mark, with a K, mark@marksalem.com, and I will call you. And if you get a call from a blocked line, it's going to be me. And I'll call you back if you don't answer. So, anybody else, you can send me an email, mark@marksalem.com, but I'm going to give Eddie first choice, and I'm going to call him first.
I'm feeling a little bad about what I said about Randy and his truck, so I do apologize. I was just being a, you know, testosterone-filled guy about the injectors. I appreciate all that kind of stuff. That's my life. Like to bust people, if you get my drift.
Well, and
if you were my customer, I'd be doing the same thing to you. So,
but you and I have the same issue. You have a 6.7, I have a 6.7, and we're always trying to beat one another.
Yeah.
And we do this for a living.
Yeah.
So you try something and you don't tell me, and all of a sudden you can outpull me from pacing with a bunch of horses, and the next thing I do is look at the work orders and I go, oh, well, you installed this, and so I do the same thing.
Yeah.
So the idea is that we talk about that a lot, but it's just competitive testosterone. That's
fun.
All it is.
It's fun.
602, oh no, we're done with the show. Next Saturday we'll be here from 10 to noon, and you're welcome to join us under the hood with Mark Salem here on 960.